WGNS, Murfreesboro.
This is FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. Rutherford County's place to talk. Stand by, Rutherford County. The WGNS Action Line continues a search for truth.
Good morning to you. Welcome into the Action Line from WGNS. This morning we are focusing on Middle Tennessee State University. In our first segment, H. Stephen Smith is with us, professor of voice at the MTSU School of Music. First of all, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Great to have you with us this morning.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Tell us about some special programs that are coming to MTSU that everyone would enjoy being a part of.
Well, one of the things that I'm particularly involved in is I run the opera theater at MTSU, and we're going to be doing a performance of Dido and Aeneas, a Henry Purcell opera. It's composed back in the 1680s, so it's a few hundred years old. But we're going to set our production 500 years into the future. The year will be about 2500, actually. So that should make it a little more interesting for people to watch and listen. It's three acts, but it's only about an hour long as far as the music is concerned. So even if you hate it, you don't have to stay there very long. Hopefully you'll enjoy it. Give it a chance. It was written like a British composer, Henry Purcell, as I mentioned earlier. So it's in English. That's the original language. And the kids are doing a good job. We've got it roughly blocked out now, the entire show. And we've got another 6 weeks to get it together. And, of course, one of those weeks is spring break. But we'd have plenty of time to get sort of the rough edges smoothed out and hopefully we'll be running like a well-oiled machine.
Now, you say you're bringing this 500-year-old opera into today's times?
Well, it's like I say, 1680s. So it was, what, about 300 years old or so, a little over 300 years. Our production is going to be placed in the future, the year 2500.
Aha.
And one of the reasons we did that, frankly, was I've got 14 students involved, and most of them are voice majors at MTSU, music majors. That's how many people signed up for the opera theater this semester. And so I thought, I've got to figure out a way to keep these kids on stage most of the time, because there's a lot of chorus involved and some choreography as well. And so I've figured out a way I think is going to work out. I mean, we're going to have our first complete run through this afternoon, and I'll find out just how close I am to making it work. But like I said, we have several weeks to get it together. And one of the other reasons was I kept thinking about costuming, and that's not something the opera theater has. We reach out to people to help us out with that. And I kept thinking about Star Wars and Star Trek and things like that, and I thought, this would work well several hundred years into the future, as I envision it. And so we're going to be using some costumes that you may recognize from TV shows in the past. And movies.
Now, when you look at the works as originally created by Henry Purcell, mm-hmm. What was he wanting to accomplish, and how is yours totally different? Is the setting totally different? Is everything?
Well, the setting will be different, but the story will still be the same. It's about love. It's about people being getting close together, and then one person leaving. I mean, this is a story that humans have been, for thousands of years, have been dealing with. So even 500 years in the future, the basic storyline will not change. Because I suspect that human beings will be human beings many years into the future, as I suspect we have been for many thousands of years as well. Human emotions play a big part in our lives. So the story will be the same. It's based on a book 4 of Virgil's Aeneid, which was written, 20 to 30 years before Christ, actually. So it's an old book. A lot of people have read this Latin poem, a very epic poem for schoolwork, either in high school or in college. And book 4 is where we base the story of Dido and Aeneas. Purcell actually composed this for a girls' boarding school in Chelsea, in England. Josias Priest was the headmaster at this boarding school. He was a famous dancer and choreographer. And we're not quite sure. I mean, because there are bass parts and there are tenor parts in the chorus and all that. So if a girl, we don't have very many girls singing bass, as far as I can, even several hundred years ago, I don't think. But there probably were several different types of productions of this particular opera in the 1680s. We do know that the production that took place at Josiah Spreece Boarding School in Chelsea took place in 1689. Probably they had some people from outside that were not girls at the boarding school who were involved. Aeneas is a boy's role. It's a man's role. For example, Dido is the queen of Carthage, and Aeneas is coming from Troy. The city's been sacked, and he and his men leave. They've had to leave. There are there are people who are on the run from their homeland, They get there, and Dido and Aeneas find themselves attracted to each other. Now, Dido has been married, but her husband has passed away. And as far as we can gather, it's maybe a couple of years or so since his death, her husband's death. She's finding herself attracted to this man, and this is the first time since her husband's death that she's felt these kinds of feelings for anybody. Her friend Belinda, who is her maid-in-waiting, if you will, tries to convince her that, look, you know, it's okay to have these feelings, because I think Dido's feeling a little bit guilty about, you know, has it been that long? And yeah, it has been. You need to get on with your life. Life goes on. So she finally gives in and allows that relationship to flourish, and then all of a sudden, for reasons we don't really know, it's not in the story, it's not in the opera, the witches are very much against Aeneas and Dido getting together. They're not crazy about Dido. We don't know why. I'm going to try to make it a little more obvious why that is in our production, but how successful I'll be, we'll have to see. But we don't know why. But so they have an apparition appear to Aeneas saying, well, you have to get back to Troy to reestablish the city of Troy. So you're going to have to leave. Well, Dido is very upset by this, as you might imagine, because it took her quite a while for her to allow herself to get involved emotionally with this man. So she's very upset. Well, he offers to stay. He says, I'll defy the gods. I will stay here with you if that's what you want. She says, no, I'm not going to do that. No, you've made your decision. She's very upset. She's not really interested in hearing anything else. So he leaves. And what happens next? Well, she commits suicide. So it's not a real, you know, fun ending. And we're going to have her... The opera doesn't really say exactly how she commits suicide. We just know in the story, she self-immolation. She goes and she throws herself on a funeral pyre and burns herself to death.
There seems to be a rebirth in opera. It seems to be more and more people are following opera. Is it the traditional opera? Or is it preferably opera in the English language, or what?
Well, from your mouth to God's ears is all I can say. I wish more and more people were interested than there are. But you're right. There seems to be a renewal of interest in this. Some of it is the fact that everything we do at opera theater at MTSU is in English. We do some of the scenes programs that we might do in the fall will be in the original language occasionally. In this particular case, it is in English. And for an American audience, that's sort of important.
It's like going to a play and it's in German.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you have no clue.
It's good to know sort of what's going on stage. And the singers need to, I mean, I've often heard people tell me that when I was making a living as an opera singer before I came to MTSU, I would recommend people, why don't you come see the show? We're doing it, you know, next week or whatever. I said, I never understand what they're singing. I said, well, it's going to be an English translation, perhaps. I still don't understand them. I said, well, that's not your fault. If the singer is singing correctly and singing efficiently and well and in a healthy fashion, you should be able to understand them if they're singing in your language, and at least enough to follow the story. And if you can't do that, that's not your fault. That's the performer's fault. And it's incumbent upon my singers, my students, and me as a singer myself, when I'm singing in a language the audience is fluent in, they should be able to understand me, and they should be able to understand these students. That's a real important part of what we try to do at MTSU, because I don't accept the fact that you can't understand the singers. That's just not that. If they're doing their jobs properly, that is not true. You should be able to understand that. And otherwise, you know, otherwise, why would you do it? I mean, it's just, well, if you can't follow a story, why tell the story? What's the point, really?
And you do it beautifully, by the way, and you've had some real successes. Share with us some of your recent hits that you've had at MTSU in the area of opera.
Well, last spring we did a performance of The Tenderland by Aaron Copland. And it's an American opera in English, the original language. And the kids did a really good job with that. And that was a longer opera. It was about 2 hours in length. We had very good crowds at Hinton Hall, which is that's a bit of a challenge in itself. Hinton Hall is a wonderful concert hall. It was built to be a concert hall, and it serves that purpose very well. But as a theatrical, it's not built for theatrical productions. So it presents challenges. There's no wing space, for example. The lighting, there's very little theatrical lighting in there. We have to bring lighting into that space to make it work theatrically. We have to build in wing space or, you know, space to the side of the set. They have to sort of incorporate that into our set designs. And Michael Baggerly, who is the interim, he's at Department of Art, the head of the Department of Art this year, he is designing the set for us, and one of his sculpture classes is helping to build the set. So I'm looking forward. I mean, I've seen some sketches. I'm looking forward to actually seeing the set in reality, but he's been able to incorporate those sorts of things into the set, so that will be helpful. And we have pretty good crowds at our scenes programs in the fall, where we do not only operatic scenes, but we also do things for musical theater. This particular production will have some cooperation with theater as well. I'm meeting with them tomorrow, example, to deal with this question of lights. Some of their lighting people are coming over. We're going to talk about what can we bring into Hinton Hall to help make it a better venue for theatrical productions. So I'm hopeful that that's going to be addressed successfully for this production as well.
What are the dates that this will play?
The first performance is on March 31st. That's a Friday evening at 7:30 in Hinton Hall. And the following day on April 1st, and this is not an April Fool's joke, on April 1st, on Saturday at 7:30 in Hinton Hall, our other cast will do it. I have the March cast and the April cast. And if they're not doing lead roles, then they're doing a secondary role. And the next night, they'll switch that around. So that's one advantage to doing a relatively short opera. You give more students a more opportunity to sing more meaty roles, and I think consequently when you do that, when you offer students that, they get more invested in it, and they tend to be more excited about it, and they work harder, I think.
So this is two nights, Friday, March 31st, and Saturday, April 1st.
That's true.
And should we get tickets in advance or get them?
Oh, well,
at the door?
I'm trying to set that up with MTSU Arts so you can do that, so you can bring your you can print out something online there and bring it to the show. It's $10. MTSU staff and faculty and students are admitted for free. Just show your MTSU ID. But we're hoping that people in the community will also come, and that helps defray our costs a little bit. So you're helping to contribute to the education and advancement of music students, aspiring opera singers, many of them. And that would be very helpful. We would be very grateful to you. It would be very helpful to us if you come out and check it out. Give it a chance.
Sounds like a winner. And again, the production is
Dido and Aeneas by Henry Purcell.
And it's coming up March 31st and April 1st. And that's at MTSU. If you have any questions, give this number a call, which I believe is your number, 615-898-2504.
That's correct.
Okay, and circle those dates, March 31st and April 1st. H. Stephen Smith, professor of voice in the MTSU School of Music, our first guest. Stay with us. We'll be back. And some exciting things happening at has been around for a while, but it's even better now, the Weiser, Patton, and Davis Science Legacy Buildings. Stay with us.
Now, more than ever, start your mornings with WGNS. The Action Line with Bart Walker, weekdays at 8:10. Truman Jones is on weekday mornings at 9 on WGNS.
Kids and diamond rings don't typically go together. However, this young man knows what his mom likes.
I'm going to get mommy a diamond ring. She really likes diamond rings.
It's always good to get mommy that special gift that makes her smile. Remember, moms love diamonds, no matter what time of year it is.
I'm going to get her something special.
Bell Jewelers on Broad Street, across from Toots, right here in Murfreesboro. Bell Jewelers, a local tradition for over 135 years.
Hi, this is Peter Demas with Demas's Restaurants and Peter D's Restaurants. Peter D's and Demas's are both hiring for all positions. We are looking for people in their kitchen, for out front, management opportunities. We have flexible schedules. You know, if you want it as a second job to make a little extra money, we have different opportunities available to you. We hire veterans. For the most part, we are felony friendly for many of our employees. There are certain felonies that we don't hire, but for the most part, we believe in giving people second chances. We have a chaplain for all of our employees. Anytime that you're going through a crisis or whatever, or your family member's going through a crisis, we have a chaplain that could help. It's probably our most popular benefit that we offer our employees. At both Peter D's and Demas's restaurants, we care about the employees. They become part of our family. One of our main values of our purpose statement is that we are here to serve and care for our employees. This is Peter Demas at Peter D's Restaurant on Medical Center Parkway or Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street, both in Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Play it again, sports!
Your fitness headquarters.
We've got our hands on name brands like Schwinn, Horizon, Bowflex, and more. Create your own discount. Bring in your old sporting goods and walk out with new equipment.
Play it again, sports!
On Thompson Lane.
Good morning. Traffic still moving in here for the most part. We've checked sections of Mercury Boulevard there at Broad Street, just the normal traffic, and also there in the construction. Just bear with it. Traffic on the interstate all in all not too bad. A little bit lighter than normal out here with a lot of people with the day off. If your car gets damaged in an accident or whatever, take it to Alliance Auto Body at 420 Rice Street. Call Butch and Billy Joel at 217-7770. Online, allianceab.com. I'm Commander Chuck. You're on time traffic.
Thank you, Chuck. What about that Murfreesboro weather? Brought to you by First National Bank of Murfreesboro.
We'll see mostly sunny skies here for your day today with a high in the mid-70s and winds out of the southeast between 5 and 10. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio WGNS. Right now, 43.
I'm Brian Barrett. Join us for high school sports all season long.
WGNS, your good neighbor station.
Rutherford County's place to talk.
Hey, welcome back. We are focusing this morning on Middle Tennessee State University. Dr. Ron Henderson is with us, the chair for the Department of Physics. Good morning to you. Good to have you with us this morning.
Good morning. I really appreciate the invitation to come and talk about some great things happening at MTSU.
Oh, I tell you, everybody who has been to MTSU, former students, remember the Weiser Patton building, and it has been sort of reshaped, redone. The Weiser Patton and Davis Science Legacy buildings now. Does it look at all like maybe some of us might have remembered?
There are strong similarities on the exterior of the building. And so they really did not make major changes. Davis Science will certainly look familiar from the outside to someone who had classes there years ago. And Weiser Patton will actually look more familiar to someone that saw it in the 1930s and 40s, and there may not be many of those people because the exterior got quite a facelift. But the inside, I don't believe you'll even recognize that you're in the same buildings.
So, I mean, this looks like a brand new facility.
There's no doubt about it. I used an analogy the other day speaking with someone that it's like having a classic vehicle with 2017 parts on the inside. So we have the beautiful facade and the history that comes along with seeing those two buildings built in the 60s and the 1930s. But when you walk inside, it just feels like a completely different building and almost like a different university.
Well, but for $20 million investment, it should look different, I guess.
It absolutely should. And we're just so fortunate that the construction could even happen. And the majority of the money, maybe all of the money, came from cost savings from the science building that was opened in 2014. So not only those two departments, biology and chemistry, moved into those departments a few years ago, but now over time we're able to lift all the sciences up to a very high level.
With the direction of education these days and the need for more people in the area of science, there's been a calling for renovations and additions in this area at MTSU for years. I mean, I can remember it back in the 60s and 70s. There was a call for this. We finally were able to get the money to do that. Now that it's happened, what is this going to enable Middle Tennessee State University to do that it could not do in the past?
Well, there's a couple of areas that we can address that. One is in the teaching style. And in the sciences, and particularly in physics, I can speak a good bit about, we've known for a long time that the best way for students to learn is not necessarily sitting in a lecture and listening to someone say really smart things, right? That's sort of the model that was developed probably thousands of years ago. But now we realize that in order to learn science, you really need to practice science. And so if you were to walk through the halls of Wiser Patton today, instead of seeing lots of rooms with rows of chairs for students to listen, you'll see sections of tables. You'll see 6 to 8 tables where groups are working together. And so faculty are definitely there serving as mentors, and they still do a little bit of what you might call a traditional lecture, but immediately the students get active. They are solving problems. They are discussing together. They interact with computers sometimes. They do traditional experiments. But it just feels, the old style, I would say, felt more like a library. And this feels more like a community of people just living out science together.
You bring the community into this also. I know with your, is it the first Friday Star parties that
yes.
you have?
Mm-hmm.
How is that working in with this new facility?
Well, the nice thing is, as you said, we have our first Friday Star parties. And we invite the public to come in to hear a talk on some relevant science topic at a level that any member of the public could enjoy. We are going into one of the renovated rooms in Wiser Patton. The nice thing about it is really proximity. We're much closer to the observatory outside. So what we typically do is have a talk for 30 or 45 minutes. And then if the night is clear, all the guests get to go outside and look through actual telescopes. And that's one of the highlights usually of that kind of an evening.
Now, the observatory, I guess most recently, was in the front lawn of the circle. It had originally been in the back, I guess, where maybe the recreation department or near that. Most observatories are away from the city lights on a hillside. Is that in the plans?
Probably not. There's a couple of things about our observatory that are, I would say, atypical. And one is, definitely, if you want to see the darkest objects deepest in the sky, you have to have an observatory that's removed and far away. But what that means is, also, the public is removed and far away. And those types of observatories are great for pure science, but they're not very good for interacting with the public. So we made the conscious decision to put our observatory close by so that many, many more people could enjoy it. And we found that the trade-off is not too bad. Instead of being able to turn our telescopes all the way down to the horizon, we have to start at about 15 degrees up. That way we're over the buildings and over the trees and over the lights. But beyond that, there's very little trade-off. So we still get to see some deep space objects, some galaxies, and some what they call Messier objects. And so our public still gets to see, gets a lot of the benefits of an observatory that's far away.
Tell us a little, if we go across the circle there, behind the administration building, there is an interesting display. What is that?
Well, it goes by a couple of names. Some people call it the Naked Eye Observatory, and that refers to the fact that you can do some observations and learn some science without using a telescope, just with your naked eye.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Eric Klumpa, who designed that facility, has termed it the Uranodrome. But inside, some things you can do. There is a scale model of the sun, and on each of the pylons around the area, you can see also scale models of the planets. And so young children can see how small the Earth is compared to the sun, for instance. We also have a there's what's called a gnomon. It's a little ball that sticks up on a, it's on a stick, and we watch the shadow of that gnomon day after day, month after month. And so you can see the shape that the sun, it's called an analemma, looks a little bit like a sideways infinity. And we can see how the shadow of the sun traces across the ground during the year. So these are just some of the observations you can make with the naked eye observatory.
Now, speaking of the sun, this is going to be a unique year for the public to make some really fantastic things, some observances. Tell us about that.
Unique is a good term. Once in a lifetime is not a stretch at all. Not at all. So on August 21st of this year, 2017, there will be a total solar eclipse here in Murfreesboro. And people have heard of eclipses, I'm sure, throughout their lives. And a lunar eclipse is one that more people have seen. That's when the Earth blocks some of the light or all of the light that's striking the moon. A solar eclipse is different. Now the geometry is the sun is shining light, the moon is blocking light from the Earth. Because the Earth is so much larger, the shadow that the moon makes on the Earth is tiny. It's on the order of 100 miles in diameter. And so during a solar eclipse, that tiny shadow moves across the surface of the Earth. So at least two-thirds of the time, it's over open water, and no one is there to see it. And very often, it's over land where no one lives. The last time that a total solar eclipse came across Murfreesboro was in the 1400s, so over 500 years ago. And if you miss out in August, your next chance in Murfreesboro would be in the year 2566. So it absolutely is a chance-of-a-lifetime event.
Now, you say total 100% eclipse, a solar eclipse. It's going to be daylight, and then it's going to be dark.
That's exactly right. So the from the beginning of the eclipse to the end is on the order of about 4 hours. But right in the middle, at the pinnacle, there'll be between 1 and 2 minutes of what's termed totality. And during that time, the moon will completely block the sun. So it may become dark enough to see stars. That very often is the case. The temperature more than likely is going to drop a few degrees immediately. And it will definitely be the type of event that you've never experienced before and will be memorable for your lifetime.
Now, I've got a strange I come up with crazy ideas.
Okay.
Radio goes farther at night due to the ionosphere.
Yes.
The darkening of that solar eclipse, is it going to create everything having the feel of nighttime? You mentioned the temperatures, the not being able to see is because it's dark outside. Is that, will suddenly radio waves be going farther for that period of time, just like they do at night?
I sort of doubt we'll see that effect too much. One thing that tends to happen at night is that the humidity in the air will tend to decrease. And so that takes a little bit of time to happen. And also the size of the shadow is really about 100 miles in diameter. And it's passing, starting in Oregon in the United States. It's going to make its trace all along the United States and go back into the ocean in South Carolina. And so you get it for such a short period of time. I doubt that we'll really see significant effects on radio waves.
Okay, just curious about that.
Yeah.
Now, will people at your first Friday star parties have an opportunity to see the Weiser, Patton, and Davis building?
Absolutely. So we have moved our first Friday star parties for the last 2 years. We've held them in the new science facility that opened in 2014. And now they've moved back to room 102 in Weiser Patton. And speaking of the eclipse, the first Friday star parties between now and August are going to focus on the event itself. And so you'll get to learn, if you come to the first Friday star parties, some of the history of eclipses. You'll get to learn about the science that can take place around those. And we'll just have a lot of events that are leading up to the big event in August.
Well, we will be telling everyone about those, and so that all of you will have the opportunity to be a part of those, make it a point. The building officially opened this past Wednesday.
That's right. We had a grand opening on Wednesday.
And just so exciting to have this new addition in Murfreesboro.
It's very exciting. The other thing I wanted to mention about what we can do that we couldn't do before are some research projects. We know that in order for students to succeed at the highest level, there are certain things that can be done. And really, you can boil that down to students need to do things with faculty outside the classroom. Just going to class and then going home really is not the right formula for success in the job market. And one of the best high-impact practices is getting involved in a research project. And so many, many of the spaces in the renovated Davis and in renovated Weiser Patton are dedicated to research projects.
So now Weiser Patton has 41,500 square feet, and the Davis Science Building has nearly 75,000. You have both of those.
That's right.
Serving you.
And so some new departments have moved in. All of those spaces were housing biology and the chemistry departments, and a little bit of the space was for physics. Now, the Davis Science Building is housing geosciences department. It also has the mechatronics engineering, and it's the home of our college advisors, another critical piece in helping students succeed at MTSU.
I tell you, this is the place, the university to attend when it comes to the subjects that'll get you a job, a well-paying job. Want to say a special thank you this morning. Thank you for telling us about the exciting things. Dr. Ron Henderson, the chair of the Department of Physics at Middle Tennessee State University. Looking forward to the total eclipse.
Fantastic. I'm very glad you had me here.
Thanks again. Stay with us. Much more to come right here on News Radio WGNS.
Middle Tennessee football and basketball games are right here. This is Chip Walters on Rutherford County's Blue Raider Station.
MTSU Sports on WGNS.
We understand. There are a lot of questions when you buy a pre-owned car. At Toyota of Murfreesboro, we've narrowed it down and provided you with the three best solutions.
How do you know you got the best deal?
Toyota of Murfreesboro shops a 500-mile area and makes sure the price is the best. It's that simple. Plus, over 800 vehicles in inventory and access to thousands. And on top of that, Toyota of Murfreesboro does a 160-point inspection and gives a lifetime powertrain warranty on 08 or newer Asian cars with less than 80,000 miles. We got you covered. Toyota of Murfreesboro listens to you and knows what you want. Discover why Toyota of Murfreesboro is Middle Tennessee's fastest growing dealership. Toyota of Murfreesboro on Medical Center Parkway at I-24.
Hey there, this is Dave Kivenimi at Music World and Drummer's Den on Church Street, right across from Indian Hills Golf Course. We've got great pricing on all of our instruments, our guitars, our drum kits, our pianos. Most of the time we're at or below internet prices. Oftentimes we've got the best price you'll find on the planet, and we're right here in town. Music World and Drummer's Den, 2762 South Church, directly across from Indian Hills Golf Course.
Weather-wise.
We'll see mostly sunny skies here for your day today with a high in the mid-70s and winds out of the southeast between 5 and 10. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio WGNS. Right now, 43.
Whittlemania 2017 is back. Right now you can buy a $10 gift certificate that is worth $20 for Demas's or Peter D's restaurants in Murfreesboro, and 100% of the proceeds go to the Tennessee Fisher House. Whittlemania tickets are available at Penny's Closet and WGNS for only $10, but are worth $20.
If you have something to buy, sell, or trade, call me. Weekday mornings at 7:50 for Swap and Shop.
WGNS, AM, FM, and online.
Our focus on Middle Tennessee State University continues, and we're now talking with Dr. Brendan Martin, Professor of History and Director of the MTSU Public History Program. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
You brought some friends with you.
Yes, I did.
Tell us who you have here.
I'll have them introduce themselves.
Okay. Hello, I'm Von Shell Stembridge. I am the Program Coordinator for the City of Murfreesboro at Bradley Academy Museum.
Well, it's good to have you with us. You've been with us several times before, too.
I have, yes.
And good morning to you.
Good morning. My name's Lindsay Fisher, and I'm the project director and a PhD student at MTSU University.
Tell us a little about how you are working with Bradley Academy and also with the total programs over there.
Well, we've had a long-standing partnership with Bradley Academy Museum for a number of years. However, there's been a relatively recent shift in terms of administration there, and I'll let Von Schell speak to that in just a moment. But what we are doing this time around is that we are developing a new exhibit at Bradley Academy that will tell the story about African-American education throughout Rutherford County's history.
All right. Von Schell, tell us a little about some of the changes that are happening there at Bradley Academy.
At Bradley Academy Museum, we have already started our renovation segment. Our first phase was the contraband exhibit, which was in our foyer. Now we have an open gallery for the local artists to actually showcase their artwork. The next phase is our Bradley and our Holloway exhibit room. That's where we're partnering with Dr. Martin and his historians. In the Bradley Academy, in the Bradley and Holloway room, we're going to redesign this room. In the redesign, we're going to add some interactive components. Also showcase the actual school more. We have quite a bit going on in that Bradley Holloway room, and we're just wanting to showcase both Bradley and Holloway.
Now, this building, or the school, goes back to 1806. In fact, President Polk went to school there, didn't he?
That's correct, yes.
And when it was in its infancy, back in 1806, is any of that structure still there, or is the structure that we see later?
No, I believe this is about the fourth or fifth location for the building. It's been at that site really since about the 1840s, but the current building was opened as a school in 1918.
Okay. So the facility that we see now is dating back to 1840s?
No, sir. The current structure was finished and opened up in 1918.
Okay. I misunderstood you there just a bit. So tell us what is unique about the facility. What makes it unique for our community, for the history of this community?
Well, first of all, it is such a critically important part of our educational legacy here in Murfreesboro and Rutherford County. And this is also one of the very few structures of its type that still remains. Again, this was the first African-American school that was really funded by the local government. And so it's a very, very important part of our community, and it's something that that we're trying to draw a great deal more attention to.
It's one of those facilities that is classic at its design. You walk in and you have the staircase that is right there, the center point of the front door. It moves up into the buildings of the classrooms and then on up to the auditorium being on the second floor. Was that normal? I mean, but houses up and down Main Street had ballrooms on the second floor, so I guess why not a school having its auditorium on the second floor? As you've done renovation there over the years, have you come across any unique finds at Bradley Academy?
Well, the building has changed over time. I tell you what really has changed, though, is the neighborhood that surrounds it. From the urban renewal that took place in the 1950s, it's just radically transformed what the neighborhood looks like directly in front of the building.
Now, as you go around the building in the basement, there used to be some art studios, and I guess the basement in the old days was like a real basement where you had the furnace and things of that sort. Do you have any plans for the basement here? Because that's quite large.
We do. Right now it's under construction with the city taking over the operating and managing of the facility. Right now, we're trying to break each level down into a few phases. We have quite a bit of ideas. One is we're going to open it up to the community and get some of their feedback, but to add additional space for artists to come in and possibly do some creating. But also we have some for our youth programs, art classes, in that nature.
And we've had some other folks from Bradley Academy on the air with us in months past, and they've told us about some of the great programs that have been brought over through the Parks and Recreation Department, which is very much a part of operating this nowadays. Programs to get the general public in. Bingo, I guess that was, that one is a popular thing.
Yes, it is. We have bingo every second and fourth Tuesday of the month, and we have a nighttime bingo every first Thursday of the month at 5 p.m. So bingo has been a hit. We've had over 15 to 20 ladies to attend each night. This event is actually free for the community, so if they're interested and they're wanting to find something to do every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 10 a.m., we play about an hour-long bingo, and it is a hit.
Let me ask you this, because we learned this back when WGNS started into the talk format. We were trying to determine what makes talk. How do you do it back then? It was relatively new, and everybody was sort of wandering around. And suddenly, everyone here at the station realized it's like music. So you just find the songs people want to hear, and you play them. But with talk, it's topics. There were two topics that really stood out for Murfreesboro and Rutherford County. One of those, obviously, sports. This town is eat up with sports, so to speak. The second one is history. The town loves history. And that's one thing that you are emphasizing with Bradley Academy. Share with us some of the things that are historically oriented in Bradley right now and what you have planned for the future.
Well, we do have this exhibit coming up, and again, interpreting African-American education throughout Rutherford County's history. And we're looking at opening that new exhibit. It looks like it's going to be in early May when that develops. And Lindsay, can you tell our audience a little bit about what we're looking for as to help with this part of this?
Well, as part of the exhibit, we have a treasure trove of photographs and video footage. And there are so many of them, but not a lot of them have either the photographer or the subjects identified. So really, we're also asking the audience if they went to Bradley Academy or they went to Holloway High School, if they have a chance to come down to the museum to help us identify those people, because we would love to use as many photographs as possible, and to have all of those people identified would be wonderful.
Now, you have some old movies, you say, some videos of?
Yes, I believe it's from Holloway High School in the 1950s.
Yes, it is, and this is courtesy of Mr. Houston Overton.
Interesting. So you're going to see how it looked back when it was actually a school. Do you have any of the students coming out? Because I understand they marched out to the drum beat, cadence of a drum, and stood and raised the flag each day. Did some really neat things there.
Yeah, I have a great photograph of one of those drummer boys, which will be part of this exhibition. Another thing that I'll add is that we would like to hear from people that went to the African-American schools that were, you know, in the one-room schoolhouses around the county. This is something that we've done a tremendous amount of research on, but we do not have very many photographs of those types of buildings.
Now, what era were those in?
Really starting in right after the Civil War in the 1860s, but then they accelerated in the 1870s and 80s and into the early 20th century.
Okay, so there would be possibly some people who still, I doubt they would remember it. Do you think they would?
No, not too many people are going to remember it, but they may have photographs of, you know, maybe class pictures or at least the buildings that might be in people's attics or collections.
Are there any one-room schoolhouses still around? Not necessarily in Rutherford County. I don't think we have any here, but are there some still around?
There are, yes. Maybe not here in Rutherford County, but there are some preserved examples of that in other places.
Actually being used.
Well, they're probably being used to interpret the history rather than being used as a schoolhouse.
Because we've heard some interesting comments from people who looked at that form of education, and they talked about how the older students would sometimes help the younger students. They were all in the classroom together, and they would learn together, and the kids would progress quite quickly from what we hear. I don't know. But now, Bradley was not that type of school, but it has some authentic early classrooms, the Myrtle Glanton Lord classroom, fun to go into. What era did that go back to? What years?
Let's see. If we're talking about Miss Glanton, that would have been really starting in around the 1950s.
1947.
1940s, excuse me.
Yeah, 1947 is the actual... once you go in, that's the interpretation. So it's set up, the Heritage Classroom is set up for the 1947s.
And you have the actual desks in there. Do people ever sit in those desks and they see a carving on there and they say, I remember I did that one time?
Well, we actually have loaner desks. Those desks come from Birmingham, Alabama. And so they're the actual classroom desks in 1947s or in that time frame, but they're not the actual Bradley Academy's actual desk.
How long was that built? Was it vacant for several years and just left to sit and decay?
Yes, about 40 years.
40 years?
Yes.
We're lucky to have anything left there. So when folks stepped into it, have you heard what they found after 40 years of being unused?
Well, a lot of the old classmates that actually alumni from Bradley or Holloway, they're amazed every time when they come back for the Red and Black. That's a huge event that they host each year at the Elks Lodge. Quite a few people can't believe that the classroom depiction is an actual classroom, and now we have actual footage in that Heritage Classroom of our about a 10-minute film to start off our tours each time, and a lot of the returning people from Murfreesboro, they're just so amazed of the recreation that Mr. Willie McGowan and other community partners did to make that possible.
We're almost out of time, but when is Bradley Academy open to the public?
We are open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. Again, it's Tuesday through Saturday from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. And our telephone number is 615-962-8773.
Vonchell Stembridge visiting with us, Lizzie Fishies, and Dr. Brendan Martin. Thank you very much for joining us today.